see the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night.
Why would I play Summer Breeze with snow coming? It's just the kind of evil little man I am, I guess. You're 19 minutes after 5 o'clock on Downtown. Time for us to talk a little Red Sox. To do that, we welcome in our friend Sean McAdam from Mass Live. Hello there, Sean.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. How's your day so far?
No complaints, thank you.
Well, a rare Grapefruit League day off for the Red Sox.
Yeah, actually, I'm back in New England as of last night, so I'm having my own day off back in my own home, which is nice. But yeah, this is the final break before things wrap up Sunday in Florida for the Red Sox, who then continue on for a couple of barnstorming games against the Rangers Monday and Tuesday, and then I will rejoin them in Seattle for the start of the season next week.
So I know it's only spring training and those games don't mean a whole lot in the big picture, but I do think generally speaking, when the Red Sox have had good years, they've played well in the Grapefruit League. They've got a decent record. Could this team perhaps be a little bit better than we expect?
Maybe a little bit. We actually we're in the process of recording our podcast at Mass Live, the Fenway Rundown, and we have to do our predictions today. And I won't give too much away, but I did have them, however slightly, above 500. I've got them at 82-80, so maybe a little bit better than expected. And, you know, a little bit of improvement over last year's 78 win total. Not saying that you should keep your first few weekends of October open on your calendar, but perhaps better than we thought yet.
Well, let's talk about what we've learned here in spring training so far. As far as the young guys go and the battle for some of those roster spots, it sure looks like Sedan Rafaela is in pretty good shape to break camp with this team.
I would think so. That probably won't be made official until later this week, maybe over the weekend. But if you look at what he's done and what they wanted to see out of him, I think he's done just about all of it. There was never any question about his ability to play the outfield, his speed, the athleticism, the energy he brings. They think he's ready to be a major league center fielder right now and to be a very good one. The question was about his offense and about his ability to not chase pitches out of the strike zone, to show some better swing decisions, to really be a little more patient and selective at the plate. And he's not only done that, but he's hit the ball pretty hard when he does connect. He's got three homers. He's got four or five doubles. He's got an OPS, I think, up about 900 for the spring. So particularly, you know, with some of the injuries that have hit and some other stuff that's going on, it would seem like, you know, it would be hard to deny him a spot on that 26-man roster.
Now, Willy Abreu has had some offensive struggles this spring, but with the injury to Rob Refschneider, does that mean Abreu makes the Major League roster?
Oh, yeah, I don't think that. I think Abreu was a more of a lock at the start of spring training than Rafaela was. He's a little older and also a plus defender with a very good arm, and they think he's going to be fine in right field. He did strike out a lot this spring, but he has walked a lot too, and he's had better at-bats in the last week. He had a big 2-for-3 game last Friday against the Twins, so the at-bats have gotten better. I mean, look, they're going to have to ride out some uneven performances from a number of guys on the roster when the season gets underway. Rafael is one, Abreu's another, and when he's healthy and back available, it's likely Vaughn Grissom would be a third. But, you know, that's part of the price you pay in incorporating young, untested players. The development isn't always linear and predictable, and you have to, you know, hang with them when they struggle a little bit, and I think that's going to happen for most of them. But they see enough there that, you know, they don't think they're going to be overexposed or embarrassed, and that all those guys are headed in the right direction.
Who'll be at second base at the start of the season while Grissom is still on the IL?
Well, I guess we can't rule out seeing a little bit of Rafaela there. It's funny, at the start of spring, Alex Cora cut off any talk that Rafaela might play some infield, saying, nope, he's either going to be our starting center fielder or he's going to go back to AAA for more development time. But that was before Grissom was sidelined for a while. And I think they want to keep that option open, at least something that he can do late in the game if you move people around. But for the most part, I think you're going to see pretty much a platoon between Emmanuel Valdez and Pablo Reyes. And, Valdez gives you a little more pop from the left side. Offensively a pretty good player. Not a very good defender at second base, or at least he wasn't at the start of last year. I think when he went back down to Worcester, he worked on it and got better. And he was better the final 2 months. He's not going to win a gold glove for you, but I think he got better with his range and reads. And Reyes is a, capable utility guy. You don't want to play him every day. But if you limit him and his flexibility allows you to have him play all four infield positions, then, he's going to be on the team most of the year as the primary utility and backup infielder. But, for April, or a good chunk of it anyway, you'll have Valdez and Reyes platooning at second.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Brian Bayo got the contract extension, and now he is the opening day starter. Does that put a little pressure, an added pressure on him? Is he up to the task, or is this a chance to grow into the job for a young pitcher?
Yeah, I don't think they worry about putting too much on his shoulders. He seems like a pretty confident kid. We've seen that, in each of the last 2 years where he shows a little personality on the mound. He does not shrink from the challenge. So I don't think they worry about him trying too hard. I actually thought, despite what I just said, I thought that they might give it to Pivetta as a nod to him being the longest tenured guy on the pitching staff. And, the guy who fought back from being demoted from the rotation last year to be a pretty important guy on the staff. But I think they're comfortable with Bayo getting the ball in game one and knowing that, he's going to be a big part of the future. He's the guy that they hope ends the long drought of them being unable to develop a homegrown starter. You could debate that they've already done that with him with some of the success he's had, but he needs to do it more consistently and over a longer period. And they feel good about taking the training wheels off and letting him be the front of the rotation guy, particularly, that wasn't the plan, obviously. Giolito was going to be that guy. But sometimes you have to adjust on the fly.
What's the rest of the rotation then? Pivetta, Cutter Crawford, who's looked great this spring, and then Hauk and Whitlock?
I would think so. Certainly Hauk has pitched his way into the rotation. He's a guy that has traditionally struggled in spring training, and did not at all this spring. He was more mechanically sound. He was able to repeat his delivery more easily, and perhaps most important with him, his control was much better. He really cut his walks down. So he's definitely in, as I would say, the number four. And then the number five comes down to Garrett Whitlock or Cooper Criswell. Criswell will be the answer to the trivia question someday. In Craig Breslow's first offseason as lead baseball executive, he signed two free agents. Lucas Giolito was one. Who was the other? That's Cooper Criswell, a guy who, doesn't wow you with his stuff. He doesn't light up radar guns. He's closer to 90-91. But he moves it around, keeps it out of the heart of the plate, gets some soft contact. So he's in the running. My guess is the edge goes to Whitlock there, although, there's a school of thought that suggests, well, if you want to have some guys that are more experienced in the bullpen, take a look at Criswell as your number five and have Whitlock pitch in a role in which he's had more success. But I think ultimately they'll go with Whitlock and put Criswell in the bullpen.
Now, it sounds like maybe a stretch for Kenley Jansen to be ready for opening day. So who's the closer if it turns out they actually have a lead in the ninth inning at some point?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, you could just play the domino game and move Chris Martin into the ninth and have, you know, somebody else handle the eighth inning, whether that be Winkowski or somebody else. But we'll have to see. I think it's pretty obvious that if Jansen isn't ready for next Thursday, and it would seem a long shot now because he'd have to get, you know, three or four appearances over the next 6 days to prove himself ready to go, why rush that at kind of an arbitrary date on the calendar? Yeah, you'd rather have your guy with more than 400 career saves down there for game one, but if they feel it's rushing him back too soon and could result in losing him for a longer period, you backdate him 3 days, he misses the road trip, and he's eligible and ready to pitch for the home opener. And I suspect that's probably what we'll see. And then, you know, it's probably all about matchups for ninth inning leads that they have in those first 10 games.
Are there any roster decisions still left to be made?
Yeah, there's a couple. You got to determine who your backup kind of corner infield right-hand bat is off the bench. That comes down to Bobby Dalbec and C.J. Krohn. Guessing that Krohn gets the edge there as a guy who came in on a make-good minor league deal. You can keep both of them because Dalbec still has options. So if you keep Krohn, take a look at him for a few weeks or a month, have Dalbec get started at Worcester. If Krohn doesn't work out, you let him go and Dalbec comes up. Meanwhile, if you give the job to Dalbec, you lose Krohn as a guy that's going to go look for a job elsewhere. So, the fact that as recently as 2 years ago, Krohn was an all-star with 29 home runs, last year battled a back injury and wasn't as productive, but, he's not done, it wouldn't seem. So I would think he is the choice. They got to officially settle on Reese McGuire as the number two catcher. Roberto Perez is still in camp, but he has an opt-out on a minor league deal. I think they'll try to convince him to spend the first month at Worcester and see where they sit there. And, you know, a bullpen spot or two still has to be determined, particularly if another one is opening because Jansen isn't ready.
Do you see any scenario here in the next week or so where they make a trade or pick up a guy like a Jordan Montgomery who's still floating around out there?
Nobody big. They will not make a big free agent signing and spend money that they haven't already spent. They had opportunities to do that. If they wanted Jordan Montgomery, they could have had him a long time ago. If he lowers his numbers so much that the Red Sox suddenly see him affordable, that also means about 15 other teams think he'll be affordable too. And so I would all but rule that out. I would put that at about 1% chance.
Wow.
But I think they could still take a look at some guys who are opting out of minor league deals elsewhere, guys who have to clear waivers to get down to outrighted to the minor league. They could make a small trade around the edges, but I don't see anything of impact.
Sean McAdam, MassLive.com, with us here on Downtown. Sean, appreciate you making time for us on your day off. Enjoy your brief visit home before you head back out on the road again.
Will do, and we'll check in with you soon, Rich.
Sounds good. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. Sean McAdam with us here on Downtown talking Red Sox.